Oh man, I wonder if we're gonna see one of the biggest things that they got announced is that one of the biggest things that they were announcing is that they were gonna maybe at one point Miles Morales was gonna break out into like the live action world. So the one mind blowing thing that I can see them doing is that if we actually get like we get to meet our live action Miles Morales.
Live action.
Hey everyone, welcome back to yet another episode of I Want to Talk Movies. My name is Andy.
And I'm Andrew. It's been some time, Andy. It's been like 5 months.
It's been like 5 months. Anything crazy has happened in your life in the last 5 months? Anything major?
Nothing at all besides having I have a new roommate.
You have a new roommate. Tiny. Oh, very tiny.
New roommate. He cries a lot. He poops a lot. He can't really talk.
Not yet, at least.
But he's very nice. He's very cute.
Hey, cute makes it easier, right?
Yeah. No, cute makes everything better, actually. Like, if all the annoying people in your life were, like, adorable, like, it wouldn't matter anymore.
They're a certain level, though. They're a certain level of, I don't know if you, what's his name? Demetrius, the comedian named Demetrius or whatever. Like, it's like, there's a certain point where you could be cute, but at a certain point, I'm going to be fucking tired of you. So he drew like a little graph. Dimitri Martin is his name. He had a very weird style of performing, but I always enjoyed his performance. But congratulations on your new roommate. I actually got to meet the little guy, and he's super adorable. So that's also something major for me. I actually got to go visit Andrew in his home. And he was nice enough to put up with me for a couple of days while I was out there. So,
yeah. It was fun.
I had a blast checking out Spain and a whole new country. And it was an awesome adventure. And we got to watch one of the things that we're going to review today, which we got to actually see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 together. So that was special to me and whatnot. So, we're going to do a quick episode the two main reviews. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and of course, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, one of my long, most anticipated movies.
This is like Andy's favorites episode.
Dude, I have not been so stoked to get on the mic and record with you since we've done every time we get on the mic, I'm hyped, right? But I have not been as hyped as like when we did the Spider-Man No Way Home. So. These two films, and you'll see. I don't know if you guys will pick up on if I like them or not, but you know, we're gonna just get into it. But before we do, we're gonna do a little bit of a check in, anything that we've been kind of seeing in the background, and then get into our reviews. So, Andrew, what's been going on in your world?
Well, like I told you, I've been completely consumed with Tears of the Kingdom, playing it like. It's like funny because like my roommate makes it difficult to play, you know, because he demands a lot of attention. But the Switch makes it like kind of easy. Like I love the Switch in the sense that like I can at least pick it up. And like for some reason, like if you were to just turn on a TV and start playing video games and you have a new roommate like this, you kind of look like an asshole. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're like, what are you doing, man? Like the little dude asking for stuff and you're playing video games. But like for some reason, if I have this little like console in front of me, like it doesn't look as bad if he's like kind of napping for a little bit and I pick up the console and play it on the Switch like that. So I've been playing as much as I can whenever I can. And it's just like it's such a good game, and it's just like so easy to get distracted in the game. And I'll be like on my way to go do something, and then I'll be like, hey, what's this over here? Like I should go check this out and like make these weird weapons and like jump down this cave and see what's going on here. So I played for like 50 hours and I only beat the first dungeon.
Nice. Are you actually like, I'm picturing you in dad mode. Are you coaching your little guy when it comes to what you're doing, or just kind of just ignore him? Are you like, I feel like you're going to be coaching him and be like, look, this is what I'm doing. Pay attention.
Oh, he's so, I mean, I there was one time where he was sitting on my lap and I could just play on the TV and that was fine. He's still a little off until he'll be able to play. It's funny, my brother's playing with his daughter, who's, I don't know, she must be like 5 and a half or something, 6 maybe. And she played Animal Crossing. That was like the first game she played during COVID, and she liked that. She would like, my brother taught her how to like plant flowers and stuff. She would go like plant her flowers in her garden and like water them and stuff. And now with Zelda, she likes the horses. So she'll like, yeah, so like they'll capture a horse and she'll ride the horse. And I think that's like the primary gameplay mechanic she understands and likes to do, which is pretty cute.
That's a fun mechanic, so why not?
Yeah, the horses are fun. You have to capture them too. You sneak up on them and then you have to like pat them and stuff and you can jump over things. I mean, I like the flying machines more than the horses, but like, you know, she digs the horses.
It's the little things, right? And I feel like I forgot when they started doing this, but like when they started making these like open world interactive games, like you wouldn't be able to pet the cute animals in the game. And I don't know whose idea it was, but to like start doing, hey, like people want to pet the cute animals, you know, in the game. And like as soon as you're able to do that, the game becomes like 10 out of 10, right? Because you're like, awesome, I'm being, you know, showing some love, and this is all I wanted to do. So yeah. Now, I also ended up getting Tears of the Kingdom. You were one of the reasons why I ended up getting it, because like it just makes sense that it's one of the most like anticipated games of the year. And like I said before to you before we started recording, this is gonna be game of the year. I could already tell just from what it's been and what I've seen. Like it's just, this game's insane from what you can do in it, and from the little that I've played, it's just crazy. All the things they've added. I haven't even played Breath of the Wild, but like I was told, if you start with this one, you don't need to go to Breath of the Wild. So it's like, well, okay. So I kind of just been rolling with the punches.
Yeah. No, it'll be cool. I mean, like, I don't know if you watched this. You didn't watch that trailer for the Spider-Man game. It actually kind of makes me want to buy a PlayStation. But, like, because they just announced a release date for that Spider-Man 2 game. PlayStation, I wish they had the cheap version, though. They don't have a cheap version like the Xbox one, like the all-digital Xbox one.
I mean, for Spider-Man 2 coming out, I would say it's worth it. You know, coming from a very, very, very unbiased, you know, person who's one of the top video games is 2018.
We'll see. I could end up in the fall. I could buy three Spider-Man games, because I guess all three of them are probably for the PS5, right? The first one, the Miles Morales one, and the second one.
The first one, yeah, they could all be on the PS5. The PS5 has a deluxe version where you pay like $10 more, which I think is worth it. It comes with a Spider-Man Miles Morales and the remastered version of the 2018. So buy the Miles Morales deluxe version.
Like less than $100. You get like both of them for like $80 or something.
I think we're like even cheaper now, because the game's been out since, the Miles Morales game's been out since 2020. So it's going to be cheaper to get that. Now you might pay probably $80 to $70 for the Spider-Man 2 game, but I would say get the Miles Morales deluxe one that comes with the remastered version. You have to own the 2018 one in order to get the remastered one, I think. So I'd look into it. But regardless, those two games are some of the most fun games. Like I have a Steam Deck, so during the 11 to 12 hour flight, like I was playing Spider-Man, the 2018 one on the flight. So that was kind of fun. It's kind of playing and swinging around. But hey, they're actually more popping up more around. So it's going to be, they're easier to grab 3 years later now. So they're
Honestly, you can find them in Spain though. I think it's weird because sometimes I don't understand the market here. Sometimes I feel like they ship stuff to the Spanish market, and like, people's disposable income in Southern Europe is different than America. I mean, people's disposable income in Europe is different than America. And then in Southern Europe, it's probably a little lower than it is in Northern Europe. So like, I will see stuff that sells very quickly in America that's not available anymore, because the market in America is just hotter. So I always get surprised though, because I'm like, I'm surprised they even ship that many here, but maybe they still have difficulty anticipating it. Like, for instance, one that was super hard to find, like, I tried to get the Metroid Remastered version. That was crazy hard to find for Metroid Prime on Switch. But, like, I think I've seen, like, whenever I go into game stores, like, I see that they have PlayStations. And I've been seeing that for a while. So, like, I don't think it was that hard. Maybe at the very beginning it was. But I think after that, there's okay stock with them in Spain, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, not for the United States, but now, I mean, recently now I started seeing them like more available at like Best Buy and like GameStop and whatnot. So I think they're becoming more accessible just to get. I know at the beginning it was just kind of yeah, it was just kind of crazy trying to get that console, and I was one of the very lucky ones to get my hands on a pre-order and actually like get it. It was yeah. Crazy, but no, highly recommend getting it if you're going to try to get the Spider-Man games. And I again, as for the trailer, I'm gonna maybe apply the same rule, maybe because it's a video game, I probably will watch it. But Sony knows it's gonna get my money with this stuff, so it's just like I just want it now and I just want to play it. Like, that's yeah, so I'm excited for the fall for when it comes out. But yeah. Let's see what but yeah, have you been watching anything cool?
Yeah, so we said we'd do one each for what are you watching? I watched what I can only imagine is like one of the strangest documentaries anyone ever suggested be made in the history of time, called Flaming Hot, the story of how the Flaming Hot Cheeto was made. I think this is funny just because I think this is the super popular thing people are doing right now. Like they made the TV show about WeWork on Apple. They made a TV show about Theranos on Hulu. So these are like, I think kind of these business stories are kind of popular. I mean, I think those two are very famous business stories that like rightfully were like probably popular enough outside of the TV shows and the whatever itself to actually warrant it. I didn't even realize this was a story that had been like published in a book. So it's the story about how this guy who started as a janitor at like a Frito-Lay place in Southern California, like helped inspire the creation of Flaming Hot Cheetos, and then he becomes like, I guess, executive director of kind of like diversity outreach, just to expand like Frito-Lay's, like marketplace with communities that they hadn't been really like kind of selling products to. Supposedly, the story is like highly fabricated or something. Like there were some New York Times articles written about how he supposedly has lied about this, and it really wasn't him. I don't really care about if it's true or not true. Like the movie itself, I thought was a nice movie. It actually reminded me a lot, I couldn't believe this was directed by Eva Longoria because it really reminded me of that first Ant-Man movie, the guy who directed that first one, the way it's like narrated.
Oh yeah. What's his name? It's like
Is it Peyton Reed or something?
Peyton Reed. Yes, Peyton Reed is the director for the who's done all three. He's done the trilogy so far for Ant-Man.
No, wait, then who is the guy he was replaced with? There was a guy originally who was going to do it, and his, aspects of his script are still in that first Ant-Man movie with the way that they had that guy kind of like narrating over the scenes, because that's very much what they do.
Edgar Wright was supposed to be the director
There
for
we go. This
Ant-Man.
reminded me of Edgar Wright. And I think so. The first Ant-Man had like a lot of those touches in it because he left. But I thought he might have, I don't know. I tried to look and see if he had written some of this because it just seemed like his style. But I think, I don't know, I didn't see him. So I thought it was surprising. Eva Longoria was the one who wrote this or directed it, at
Yeah,
least.
directed it, and then I didn't look at the writer, but yeah, I got to check it out with a friend over the weekend, and the movie was fun. I and of course it definitely seemed it was dramatized and everything, but it was just cool. Just I liked and it to me it's like it seemed like a dramatized fictional made for TV or script, but like as for like. For being good and entertaining, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I had a lot of fun watching it. So,
Yeah.
I loved it.
I mean it's similar to that Tetris movie actually that I also watched on Apple TV, which is like highly overdramatized, where they had to go to Russia to get the license for Tetris and like but I liked it. I will admit too, Flaming Hot Cheetos are like the best Cheeto. So I mean like Flaming Hot Cheetos are great.
I think they're a second best to the cheese. Cheetos.
The regular cheese Cheetos? What's your favorite Cheeto? You like the puffy ones or the regular Cheetos?
I like the original Cheetos.
You just like the regular Cheetos. Have you ever had a Cheeto salad? Have you heard of this thing?
No, what the hell's a Cheeto salad?
I had this in grad school, someone made this at a party and they called it Cheeto salad. So I think it was Cheetos, Doritos, Cheez-Its, and something else all mixed in to a snack mix. and they called it Cheeto salad because all of them were cheese flavored snacks. I know it sounds like a little much. Maybe there was like some pretzels mixed in there, mini pretzels, just to kind of lighten it up a little bit. It's really good.
I'd be hands down all for that. That sounds amazing. That sounds like up my alley because I'm a big cheese fan. So maybe that's why. So the funny thing about the Flaming Hot is that like I was always the outcast with my cousins and stuff because my, you know, growing up in a Mexican family, like that was the number one choice was always like I'd get the regular, you know, Cheetos, but my cousins would always fight over the Flaming Hots. So it was easy for me. But yeah, the Flaming Hot was always one to be there in the snack area. So it was kind of funny. And so it was kind of cool seeing this and like seeing a movie based off of, you know, Latino Mexican community and whatnot. So it was good. It was fun. I enjoyed the
That was a good movie. It's a good movie. Bit.
Yeah. I got to check out Barry's the last season 4 of Barry, which it was a crazy season. I feel like I enjoyed season 3 more than season 4. It was the last season, so it was a series, last season of the series, and the way that it was strange how they did it. It was still good, and you understand how they did it, but like, but yeah. So I don't know. You have to kind of just see it, and it's a way. It's kind of crazy how like they closed off everybody's story in this show. So it's still fun. It's still well written. Bill Hader is a hell of a director. I can't tell you, but he, like, from, like, the last season and this season, like, this guy wasn't born to be a director. His shots and stuff, the way he, like, moves the camera is just incredible. So I want to see Bill Hader to continue to, like, create stuff and direct stuff. So, yeah.
Nice. I never watched it, so maybe now I can watch it.
Yeah, it is a dark comedy, and it is funny. And so I thoroughly enjoyed it, and the first, like, the whole thing is fun. Season 4 is probably the weakest one, but it's still good. The characters.
I need HBO. HBO totally just fuck something up in Spain, or I think actually in entirety of Europe. So in America they switched to Max, right? This is my 5-minute complaint. So in America they switched to Max. I use a Fire Stick for streaming. I don't have a smart TV. I prefer the stick. I prefer a secondary device.
Sure.
So I have the Smart Stick, or I have the Fire Stick, and for some reason they launched the Max app across the Fire Stick worldwide, even though the Max app is not available in Europe yet. So like in Europe on my thing, on my stick, it automatically updated to Max. I can't re-download HBO Max, so now I can't stream it conveniently from my TV. And I looked at my phone, and my phone was smart enough for whatever reason on Apple iOS. At least because it knows I'm in Europe, there's no update. It never updated it to Max. I just had HBO Max on my phone. So like, I don't know who screwed this up. I don't know if it was Amazon. I don't know if it was HBO. But like now, like until they fix it, like I can't easily stream it. I have to plug it into through my TV, through my computer or something. So I just like, it's like whatever. I'm turning off my HBO until they fix it because. It sounds like such a third world problem, but I'm just like, oh man, like I do not want to plug in my computer through an HDMI port and then like drag the screen and then select what I want to watch. You know what I mean? Like, I just find that really annoying.
Hey, I mean, I'm in the same way. I have an Apple TV connected to my TV. So I'm with you, but I mean, I'm in the United States, so I have the luxury of having Max, you know, updated. So.
So now it's all HBO Max for you guys, right? And I guess I heard there was problems in America too, but I would assume those are all resolved by now.
It's now Max, and the UI for it, like the HBO Max had a better, you know, like interface and everything. So I just don't like, I don't know. It's not bad, but it's not great either. It's like harder to find stuff too. You have to like go actually like search it and whatnot. So it takes a little bit longer rather than like, oh, where are like the HBO original series and stuff. And it's like, wait, let me, I have to actually go type it in. So it's a little clunky still, but at least you still have some of the good stuff. I am like concerned what they're going to to do or a concern of like of what they might remove and stuff, because I haven't been looking at what the new Discovery Warner Brothers merge or whatever is going to look like on the streaming app. So we'll see. But yeah, okay, so that's Barry season 3. So let's get into our first main movie, which has been, it was the first highly anticipated movie of the year for me, which is Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So on IMDb, the plot summary is, still reeling from the loss of Gamora, Peter Quill relies on his team to defend the universe and one of their own on a mission that can mean the end of the Guardians of the Galaxy, if not successful. Which, yeah, the premise, and so, soft spoiler in the premise is, something happens to Rocket, and the movie takes place on trying to get him back and stuff like that for the first part. But yeah, Andrew, overall impressions, what were your first thoughts about this?
Overall, I thought this did a rare thing a movie can do, in that it made the retrospective one better. And I wanted, this is what I always thought that like Zack Snyder would be able to do with Man of Steel. I always thought if he got Superman to a point in which he was kind of some semblance of the heroic kind of like character that people know and love, in retrospect, that like morally ambiguous character from Man of Steel, you know, maybe kind of more accepted. And that never happened. But here, you know, like I said, I've said this before, like, I don't think Guardians 2 I was ever the biggest fan of. I think actually what I wanted out of that was this movie, this really cool, bigger kind of space strange thing. And instead, that movie is just all like Peter Quill daddy problems for the most part, except for that really awesome like first like 25 minutes of the movie I really enjoy. But in retrospect, I think it's great, because actually there's some character moments in there that like, in retrospect, after knowing Rocket's story here, it makes a lot more sense. I think thematically, James Gunn has done probably the best in terms of just making a Marvel trilogy, because it's very consistent from a thematic perspective all the way through. So I think it's a very tight trilogy that he ended up making overall.
No, agreed. I just, from the start of this film, just like the first one, like in the first 30 seconds or minute of the movie, I just felt in love with this, from what it was going to bring. So it's weird, because I was like talking to another friend of mine, like deciding whether which one, like, you know, which of like the, you know, one I like the most. And I'm still debating whether I like this one over the first one, because the first one is very special to me, but this one's also special to me in like in a different sense. So I mean, I think I might like this one because it was more emotionally impactful. So I don't know, but I was just blown away of how much I like adored and enjoyed this movie. And again, I don't know how James Gunn did it, but he does it again. Like, the guy just never misses. He, you know, gave us an amazing Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad movie, as well as, you know, and I was a fan of Guardians.
He gave us a better Suicide Squad movie. I'll give him that. I mean, that movie was, yeah, it was better than the first one. I'd give that movie like a, you know, 8 somewhere.
Yeah, 8 is still good, man. And again, if you're like you said, if you're comparing it to the first one, this, yeah, the Suicide Squad is way better.
I mean, he did Peacemaker too, which I would give a 10. I think.
Oh yeah.
Peacemaker was great. So I mean, that's connected to the Suicide Squad, though, and that was also amazing.
Yeah, and I don't know, this guy just knows how to write. So let's just get into the spoilers, and like, let's get dive, you know, get into the deep dive of this, and start, you know, like, what's it called? This may have become like definitely like one of my top 5, maybe top 3 favorite Marvel movies of all time. So again, this movie, you kind of just know this is going to be an emotional roller coaster, because one of the first scenes that we get to, that we like see is they start you off with an acoustic version of Creep by Radiohead. So I don't know, and it kind of just sets like the tone of what this movie's going to going to be like. It is Rocket's story, and just from that start, like being Creep being one of the main scenes, it's like I've never, and like also Rocket is probably one of my favorite characters of the Guardians because I find him like one of the most relatable ones, you know. As for me, with like my
Rocket's my favorite. I think he's the most comic accurate too here, to be perfectly honest. Everyone else is pretty different. I think Rocket is very similar.
Got it. Yeah, and I mean, like, I think, with Rocket, like, feeling, like, the most outcasted, right, and everything, and feeling like a creep, feeling weird, like, I kind of relate to that feeling and everything, and so, like, it was just, like, that self-identifying thing, and like, self-acceptance, that whole road is, like, it's just kind of crazy, which, like, I just, again, love how he did his writing and everything, so, right.
I like that he's got the Zune still. He's got like Peter's Zune, I guess, because Peter's just like a drunk now and he almost lost it. So Rocket's hanging on to it. It's kind of cool too. Rocket actually likes the music. So he likes all this Earth music, even though he probably wouldn't admit it if you like pushed him on it at that moment.
Right. Right. And then we'll probably touch on that at a little later. But yeah, then we have one of the first things that we get introduced to. We get introduced to Adam Warlock. So I'm a little bit more interested in hearing your thoughts about his character.
I mean, I would say, I think you could probably make the case this is the only real miss in the movie. I mean, like, I don't know, it's fine. I almost want to say, like, I wonder if they felt obligated almost to incorporate him because he was the post-credit scene of the last one. So, like, I don't know, I like him. I wish he had, like, a more substantial role, let's say. I would hope at the bare minimum we get to see him again because he was very much like very different version of Adam Warlock because he's like an infant effectively, like he was just recently born from those gold people who we find out was created by the, you know, the villain of this one, the High Evolutionary. That's kind of an interesting take, but he's just there to try to get Rocket back. I mean, like, he looks good. I like the actor. I forget his. Do you remember his name? He was in The Big Sick. No, not The Big Sick. Sorry. He was in Dope Sick.
Dope Sick. Who was this? The
guy.
What's his name? He was also in his Will Poulter is what his name. Will Poulter, who plays Adam, who's Adam Warlock. Yeah, he was in a bunch of little things like Meet the Miller Midsummer is the other one that he was also in that I like enjoyed. But yeah, this guy's been doing a lot of different. He's growing. He's blowing up because he was also, you know. So I've been enjoying his work. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I liked him. I think his superpowers are cool. They displayed them really cool. That fight scene at the beginning is really cool. Like, it's fun. It's super intense. Like, no one can really stop him in the way that, like, how aggressive he comes in. Just, like, head first, just, like, going nuts. So I like that. I just hope we get to see him again in a future movie and he has time to develop as, like, a person.
Yeah, I hope we do. Because he definitely, so I got to read, so I read the I forgot what it's called, who wrote it, maybe you can help me out, but like the trade, the Guardians trade that was based off of
the Abnett and Lanning trades.
Yeah, those trades. So he was originally like, he was a part of the Guardians in that from the beginning, and he's definitely more matured and more like the straight guy in it. And like you said, like, Drax and Gamora are way different characters from, you know, in the cinema universe compared to the comic universe in this thing. So yeah. Again, all the freaking characters are amazing in this. What's it called? So yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, this kind of brings up what the main plot point is like, as Adam Warlock comes in, he does strike down Rocket, and so they kind of find that there's to cure him or to heal him, there's a bomb inside that, like, if they, you know, try to heal him, that it'll go off and he'll die. So now they're gonna go off and find how to, you know, heal him. And then we get into his backstory of how he was created by the High Evolutionary and whatnot. So there's this whole trip that they go through and everything. So yeah. And again, like, I like how how James Gunn is not afraid to make things super weird, creating a whole like planet or building out of like an organic like thing. I don't know, how would you describe it?
It's an organic planet, yeah. No, it's an organic, yeah, like everything is biological, you know?
Yeah.
So. The planet, that was, you know, that planet's awesome. Like, and the suits they're wearing are cool. They're all like brightly colored and weird looking and stuff. The planet is cool. He leans heavily into what it, like, you know, what you're allowed to do with these kind of strange cosmic characters. Because I'm sure, like, especially in Marvel now, you can just do weird stuff. I mean, the first Guardians movie was already kind of weird because it was the first cosmic thing we've seen. And there was like areas where you finally see nowhere and they're like, what's that? And like, oh, it's a severed head of like a celestial that's floating in space and people are like mining its blood. It's yep. Like, dude, that's weird. Right. And now like you can just keep going and keep doing more weird stuff and it's just kind of expected. So like, I liked that the planet was cool. And who is that actor who everyone thought was going to play? A lot of people thought this guy was going to play Nova, and he plays one of the security guards here.
Oh, Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion. So I think there's a lot of rumors that they thought he would be cast as Nova at some point in time. But it's funny, so they bring him in here as a security guard on the planet.
Well, it's funny because Nathan Fillion, him and James Gunn are good buddies, and so James Gunn is one of those directors who, like, if I was a director, I'd be the same way, where like he loves working with his friends. He'll bring him in, like directors, you know, like Tarantino always brings in Samuel Jackson for like a cameo or a role. He'll always offer him, like, can you give us some roles, you know?
Or the Russo brothers bring in random people from Community.
I love, like, Danny Pudding being in, you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier, and whatnot.
Oh, that's great. I love, whenever I see him, though, I still just think of Community. It's hard not to. I see that guy.
Ovid is one of my, he was my favorite character in that freaking show. And then you had Mr. Chang from the Community in Endgame. And so, yeah. Again, and James Gunn he's had Nathan Fillion like a cameo or have a role. Like, he did the voiceover in the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And then I think he had a cameo in his one of his first films, Super, and whatnot. So in this role, he finally got to, like, you know, we get to see his face. But like the writing and the dialogue, like, it's just Nathan Fillion is just, he's just so freaking charming and hilarious. I just like love seeing him in everything that he does. And so I just adored seeing him in this. And it was just, yeah, laughing my ass off. He made me chuckle a couple times.
Yeah, and I liked here, we got to see, like, the, you know, I think that the Peter Gamora stuff that's going on throughout the movie is really interesting and really well handled. I think it was funny that you got to see the little charming Peter from, like, the first one, the kind of, like, you know, one who's hitting on people like that. Like the one who forgot that there was a girl in his ship when he's going to get that Infinity Stone at the very beginning, you know? So I think that, you know, he's trying to get those keypads from the girl, and he said, he's like, oh, he's like, I'm, you know, he's like, don't worry, I'm going to get him. What did he say? How did he say it? I can't remember the word or sentence that he used when he told Gamora what he was doing. Charm? He said, I'm going to charm him or something?
Yeah, he used the Star-Lord's charm. Yeah, like, I'm excited to get to see this again.
And think that he's kind of like screwing it up. And at the very end, it kind of pulls through. He's like, no, I was doing that the whole time.
No, but I feel like I think he was screwing it up the first few times, but not until the very last part where he's like telling the Roni chick, right? I think that's what her name is. Like, not until
that
part.
I think that was James Gunn's wife. Was that the character?
No. That was the other,
or someone else?
No. The manager, the one that they get the information from. Roni, like the one who, like, he's like, let me speak from my heart. I can talk to them or whatever. That part, I think, is when he, like, authentically put out the charm, right? But the other times we see him bomb, which I think it was awesome to see and funny. But, no, James Gunn's wife was the security guard, yeah, who gets shot in the leg. And so
Oh, yeah, that was his wife.
Yeah, that was his wife. And she's also one of the main characters in Peacemaker. So, no, that was fun seeing her, too.
Shot by Gamora. I love this version of Gamora. I really like how he kind of backstepped. And, like, I don't know what it is. I think it's interesting because, like, I think Gamora was the I just think it was lame. She's been lame in all of these movies since the very beginning. I think they totally screwed up her character. I can handle Funny Drax. I think Funny Drax works. It's almost the same as Thor. I'm like, whatever. This is wildly different, but it totally works. And it's funny, and Dave Bautista is super charming, and he pulls it off in the same way that Chris Hemsworth pulls off, like, big, goofy Thor. It just works. It's fine. I think Gamora was lame from the beginning. Like, I think she falls for Peter, like, way too quickly, and, like, it never made sense at all. She's not nearly as dangerous as she should be, but, like, this one felt dangerous. I feel like she's a Ravager now. She doesn't give a shit. She cares about her Ravager family members, but, like, anything else, she's just, like, a dangerous person like she should have been from the beginning. So I like that he kind of, like, I mean, it's kind of interesting because the Russo brothers, like, did this, right? They were like, hey, we're sorry, probably. They're like, we got to do this. We think this is best for the story. Like, we're getting rid of her because this is how it fits. And then I'm sure James Gunn had to just, like, react to that and figure out, like, how is he gonna, you know, follow up on that kind of big bomb that they just kind of, like, drop into the middle of his story. And I think it was actually for the better because it gives him the opportunity to kind of, like, wipe the slate clean and do a better version of Gamora.
But you know what's funny, though, is that that scene when they're riding on the elevator was the Aroni chick when it's Peter, Nebula, and Gamora was the manager. Like, he gives that whole little mini monologue of what happened was in, like, you know, the between, like, Gamora and, like, Thanos and everything in a very, like, nutshell way. I feel like that was part of James Gunn, like, saying, like, hey, this is what I had to deal with from, like, what the other movies kind of brought along. And, like, you know, it was kind of, you know, did it make sense? No, but did I have to work it out? I had to work it out. So I thought it was kind of funny the way that he had to, like, work with it. And that was him pretty much telling us, like, yeah, I was dealt with these cards, but this was, you know, it is what it is. So I definitely enjoyed that little bit of it.
No, I think it was handled well. What do you think of Rocket Raccoon's, like the big story of here, Rocket Raccoon's kind of backstory and history?
I knew a little bit of it because I played the Telltale games of the Guardians of the Galaxy one. So they gave during that game, they actually give you a little bit of Rocket's background of where he was, like, created and, like, where you meet Lila and everything. So I already knew it was going to be, like, a tragic story from his side. But it just, as for character building and everything, like, I just loved it because you understand why he's so shut in, so resentful, so such, like, an asshole, and how he's, like, but from, like, the beginning, you can see how he was such a loving, caring person, you know, with his friends that he had. And whatnot until he loses all of them, until, you know, they get killed, and what greets him and stuff. And so,
yeah,
the one thing I loved. Go for it.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
So I think the one thing I liked, I don't know if you showed the video when we were watching the review, but they pointed out Screen Rant. I think in one of the videos they pointed out something that I really liked, which was that Rocket was the only one that was not, you know, running against the other side of the cage when the High Evolutionary was reaching in to grab one of the raccoons.
Yeah.
And so I think that was one of the coolest moments there that I liked, that he, pointed out that, like, that's what kind of separates Rocket Raccoon compared to the others there, because he was curious, and that creates, you know, that kind of consciousness of, like, curiosity is what breeds, you know, it breeds intelligence and stuff. So
yeah,
it was kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I guess the subtext there theoretically could be that, like, Rocket was inherently special, and it wasn't anything the High Evolutionary did. So the High Evolutionary wants Rocket back because he wants to replicate what he did, because he can't create anything since Rocket that's that able to, like, use creative problem solving and stuff like that. Everyone else that he creates is just like not as smart, effectively, not as, you know, not as good in his eyes. So it's kind of interesting that it might have not been him who actually made that. It was just there was something inherently special about Rocket that he just kind of amplified with whatever the hell he did with his, like, cybernetic stuff. I like that. I think it's interesting. I mean, like, and then James Gunn does do a really good job. It is super emotional. Like, little baby Rocket is super cute, and like, it's very sad. Like, the animal friends that he has are really creepy, and it's also sad because of how creepy they look. Like the rabbit with the legs, you know, it's all in the walrus and everything. It's just like, you know, it's yeah. It's emotional, and you can tell.
Yeah, how was there a podcast that I like to, you know, that I pretty much like very much influenced by, which is the Filmcast podcast. And so they were having a long debate, which like I kind of, you know, like wanted to kind of bring up here about how this was very on the cusp of like rated R, right? Because of the animal cruelty. Because, like, I wouldn't want to take, like, a 6 or 7-year-old. Like, I think about my niece, right? She's 6. And I'm like, I don't think I'd want to take my – I would, you know, tell my brother, be like, hey, I would avoid – you know, and I told him, like, I would avoid taking your daughter to go see this because, like, it's – the animal cruelty in this is pretty intense, you know? So,
yeah, it's pretty terrifying. Like it's pretty borderline what they do. I think it was, you know, they had the first MCU F-bomb, which is kind of funny that where yep. They decide to use it. I'm surprised Rocket doesn't say it. But it's kind of funny. I mean, like, it's a funny scenario that they put in there, someone trying to unlock the door. But yeah, you're right. I mean, like, the level of violence, especially at, like, what it's being directed at, is pretty intense for a Marvel movie, probably as intense as it's ever been. And probably, like, it'll probably be the most R-rated until we get the actual first R-rated one with Deadpool.
Dude, so the, you have Gamora, like, freaking tear off the High Evolutionary's, like, fake skin. Like, that was also pretty freaking terrifying. Like, you get someone's face get peeled off. So I'm like,
that was good. Well, okay. That was some good CGI, though. That, like, reminded me of some, like, the Dark Knight, kind of, like, Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
See like the side of his face, and it's all like really, it's like you can see it down to the bone and stuff, and it's all gross.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, what do you think about speaking of the High Evolutionary, like what do you think about the actor?
I like the actor. This guy's really good. He's also a recent collaborator of James Gunn from Peacemaker. He was the leader of the group, and actually one of the butterfly people. So yeah. I like him a lot. I think this was a cool High Evolutionary. You know, I like his obsession with trying to create something perfect, this, you know, weird obsession that he can't kind of replicate. I like that they didn't kill him, thank God. Like, if they want to bring him back, bring him back. If you never want to bring him back, don't. But I just, like, appreciate the fact that, like, he wasn't killed. Although, if you could rationalize killing anyone in any of these movies ever, like, he's the easiest one. So yeah. I'm almost surprised Rocket didn't just pull the trigger, because it's like, man, this guy is – he just destroyed an entire planet of people, of life. Like, literally had just created – just caused genocide pretty much. So I was like, well, okay, that's a little weird. And then they also said – like, the Guardian said, like, we don't kill people, but then, like, when they break in, they kill a bunch of people.
Well, like, so
like you're really being flexible with these rules now, but –
So they don't kill people, but like the only person, like legitimately the only humanoid person to kill is the recorder seal, the guy who has the recording, or like, you know, one of the High Evolutionary henchmen, when they jump out of the building as the ship is leaving, right? So as they're leaving, Peter jumps off with the guy and like legitimately kills him. But as for like the But maybe you're right, because they do have some bad guys in like that Amazing Hall scene, who they just kind of kill.
That hall scene was great though. That was incredible. You know, these are probably really difficult at this point to actually one up. Ever since, I guess Daredevil was maybe one of the first really big publicized one, that like one long shot straight down the hall, and now that even that was inspired from what is that? That like South Korean action movie, I think, that I can't remember the name of.
I don't remember which one.
I think it's South Korean. I think it's a Korean action movie, and I think took a lot of inspiration from that. But anyway, I mean, these scenes are like, I think, really, really popular now, and directors like to throw them in. So they're probably like, they're hard, I think, to replicate. Least they're hard to like make impressive every time, because you've kind of seen it before. This one was impressive.
Yeah, long one shots are, like you said, you have to have the choreographs like to a T, you know, and it's just incredible to like pull those off. Like you said, the Daredevil scene in the hall, like that was crazy. They did that each season too, which I love. They have one episode where they have like a long one shot, which had the hallway scene, we had the stairwell scene in season two Daredevil, and then we had the hospital scene for Daredevil, which that was like 11 minutes long. So, but in this particular hall scene, which like, oh man, with the background music to No Sleep Till Brooklyn and everything going in the background, like they had the way they shot this, they had a guy like on like a swing that was being pushed around and turned while they did this whole shot to make it look so smooth and to make it look just the way that it was done. I'm like, holy shit. Like, it was just kind of cool because I watched a little bit the making of and everything. So it's just always mind-blowing how creative these directors can be with how they want to shoot and block these scenes and whatnot. So that was probably one of the best action scenes I've seen in a long time. And I just, yeah, that was like the Guardians team, like, fulfilled at his, you know, fully realized at his best, and it's just amazing. And James Gunn does he has like his iconic, like, you know how every director has like their thing? So I feel like James Gunn has his thing is the slow walk to the camera scenes, which he does twice in this one. He does it in the beginning where they do the opening, you know, scene where they're carrying Peter, as you know, because he was drunk, with the Guardians of the Galaxy title in the background. And then they do it as they're going into that main hallway, which I love how they still keep the characters in the character, because you can see Gamora like eye rolling, being like, well, shit, I'm going to just go with these people and like just because they're going to get this kill. So I'm just going to help out, you know. So I just, yeah, because he's done it in Peacemaker. He's done it in the Suicide Squad, and he's done it in the other Guardians of the Galaxy. So, yeah, that's something I wanted to kind of just point out. Something I wanted to also ask was, you and I, and I think some other friends were talking about, oh, and like some of my boss and my coworkers were like kind of thinking like, well, it's the final movie. Do you think they're going to kill anyone off? And I was waiting for me to be upset at one of our, you know, beloved Guardians of the Galaxy to be killed off. But no one dies. So I wanted to hear about your thoughts on that.
I actually like that decision. I think that's nice. I mean, I think it's dumb now when characters die in comics because everyone knows that they'll be back. I mean, in the MCU, it's more permanent. So I guess it's easy to expect it, especially for some of the actors who've been pretty vocal about them saying like, I have no intention of coming back, like Dave Bautista. So, you know, you kind of, it's an easy thing to do. Okay, let's kill Drax. That's easy. Let's kill whoever. They can probably do it well. They can make it emotional. People will be sad. But I like the idea of just, you know, everyone kind of gets a happy ending. I really like it. And I like the fact that like Peter just at least comes to acceptance instead. I think that was a subversion too. He comes to acceptance that like the Gamora that now lives in his universe is not the Gamora that he knew, and his Gamora is gone and he has to move on. And I like that too, because he could have done the lame cheesy thing where he somehow like convinces her to whatever that like they were meant to be together, and she, you know, falls in love with him again, and then they both get to be like happy that way. And I think that's just like the easy way out. And I think this one's just much more interesting from a character perspective.
Yeah, agreed. I was like, again, because I think it was on Eris's expectation that people were going to get like killed off. I'm just glad that he's like, well, no one, for a story to end does not mean someone has to die, right? A story can end when something is realized. And again, that just comes down to how strong the writing is.
And it did create a lot of tension because I did actually keep thinking Peter's going to die. So I kept going back and forth with a lot of the characters. And then, you know, at the end, no one dies. So that was good. I like that. There's a new Guardians team. I think that's interesting. Maybe they'll make another Guardians movie with someone else at the helm. Supposedly James Gunn, at some point in time before they like kind of fired him and rehired him, they were going to make him do a, or they had hired him to do a lot more of the cosmic stuff. So maybe they'll get someone else to come in and do more cosmic stuff with like either the Nova Corps or like another form of the Guardians or something like that. But
yeah, I mean, I just don't know I can't see another Guardians movie without James Gunn's, you know, touch on it. Like, it's just
No. I think they have to, actually. I think they have to. Because I think it's actually really bad if this is all associated with James Gunn, because it's not good for the this is a franchise that should be able to live separate from him, you know what I mean? These characters, like, he didn't invent any of them. He created interpretations of them. So I think it would actually I think it's really important that they let someone else handle them well, too. And it's just not only associated with James Gunn.
I guess my point is that, like, I don't think we're going to get something as good as it was in the hands of James Gunn. And again, like, I completely agree that this isn't like the end. Like, we'll see some of these characters come back, right? Like, even at the end, like, one of the post credits, you know, after the second post credit, it said Star-Lord will return. So again, who knows if we have him like come back to the Guardians of the Galaxy. We left off, you know, with a new team. So like you said, they're gonna like, and I 100% agree that I can see them kind of creating more of another cosmic team. And I would love to see like a what's it called, Ghost Rider Guardians, right? Cosmic Ghost Rider as Frank Castle being that, you know. So yeah, who knows what they have planned in the future for the people who still the character that still remained and the future Guardians team that comes up. So that's just my point, is that I don't think I'm gonna really as enjoy it as like I think like the for me like the Guardians here have peaked at this point. But and again, I could be wrong, but right now it's just my feeling of it. So, well, we'll see. Any other things you want to add on to this? Into wrapping this discussion up before we move on.
No, I think it was good. Another kind of like, you know, trilogy ends in the MCU. It's probably good for the Marvel universe to have had this one get released this year, because I guess maybe Ant-Man financially was a little disappointing. It's pretty obvious to me that Marvel Studios is trying to like slow down some of the rollout of this. You know, they maybe reevaluated the success of phase five?
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe they're thinking phase five was not as successful, and which, you know, I get it. You can make that case. I still really like Ant-Man. I still feel like there's some pushback now when people thinking Ant-Man is not good, or like they liked it at first and then in retrospect they don't like it. I watched it again. I think it was great. Probably did not hit the financial numbers they wanted. This one, I think it hit like almost 800 million. So that's probably more financially successful, at least for this. I don't know if they would have expected this one to hit a billion or not, because the other ones didn't hit a billion, but this is probably a success for them.
No, this one definitely was a success for them. And I just feel like people, so here's, and this is not me. So it's part of the superhero Marvel fatigue, right? And especially when like they all feel like they're kind of blurred together as like, okay, that was fun, you know, because a lot of the films like the Ant-Man and in the Quantum Realm, as well as like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and even Thor Love and Thunder, they were kind of, everyone had the kind of same kind of a feeling about it. Like, it was okay, right? Like, that's, it wasn't bad, but like, yeah, it was fine is what they said. But not until we got like Spider-Man No Way Home and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 where they're like, holy shit, you know? Like,
was Guardians the close of Phase 5?
I don't know, actually. I should probably look that up.
I'll check it out. But yeah, I mean, I would say so far post Endgame, those two are probably the best.
Yeah, those two, like, again, that's what refreshes me, what revives me to like continue on this like Marvel train, you know, like this thing, like, oh sweet, like I want more of that. And so it's just, yeah, I mean, again, with Ant-Man it was fine, it was fun, but I would just say that like there has been stronger movies, right? We're like
We're in phase four. We've been calling it phase five.
Oh yeah.
Can't even remember anymore.
There's so many phases. But like, what was it?
The end of phase four was Black Panther. So we are in.
Wakanda Forever. That was the end of phase four.
Yeah, okay, that was the end. Okay, so yeah, Guardians is the second film of phase five. So Ant-Man was the first, Guardians is the second.
Got it. So we are, okay. So we weren't wrong.
Yeah, you can maybe make the case that phase four was, they didn't get what they wanted, at least from a financial perspective. And it's also I don't know. I think it's all highly connected. I think some people think it's not connected. I think it's just as connected as I think I would expect it to be perfectly honest. I don't think it needs to be any more connected. I mean, sure, I guess the other ones were a little more connected with the fact that the Infinity Stones kept popping up and, you know, the crossover of like the main three characters into the Avengers and stuff was the connection and stuff. And there's no crossover like that to happen anymore. Like there's no, and I get that, but I still just think it's really obvious in the fact that like it's time travel and it's the multiverse. That's the connection. And we'll talk about this more with Spider-Man. It's an even bigger connection now. It's massive.
Oh man. Jeez. But no, like I'm not gonna see. I think like you mentioned, like I feel like the same way. Everything's connected, but I feel like because it's not as directly and as in your face connected, they're like, okay, you know. But again, like I think there was a little bit of a slowdown because we had to remember that like we need to have new characters that are coming in, right? Like we're setting up for like Young Avengers, they're setting up for new characters, and that just takes time, you know, like. You know, like we're gonna get more of like Shang-Chi, right? And I'm excited to see more of him, him, you know, and stuff like that. We have, you know, like in the quantum realm, in the latest Ant-Man, we had his daughter. What's her name? Hope. Well, no, not Hope. Was it Hope? No, that's his partner. But that's Wasp. But
Casey.
She becomes Cassie. Cassie becomes Stature later on, right? As one of the Young Avengers, I think. So, and then we have, Miss Marvel, who we saw there.
It's all still super connected. So it's still super connected. Yeah. I get it. They're not as smash hits as they used to be. So, but anyway, I think it was good. It's good. They're all still connected. I hope they continue to put in, I hope we get through this Kang stuff. I hope we get through the Kang stuff, and I hope they, you know, we'll just, I'll be amazed if they get to the other side and they can still continue doing more. They can probably do, I mean, if anything, before we go into Spider-Man, we should move on soon. I would just say, I think the only other alternative they had to this, and it probably just didn't work from a timing perspective, was they could have leaned into X-Men or Fantastic Four, but I think the acquisition just would not have made that possible for them to get that up and running fast enough. Because I still think you could have done an entire movie, like a series of movies where like the Fantastic Four are at the center now instead of the Avengers. And I think you could sell those characters to be wildly popular. Like little kids in Europe buy Captain America stuff and they love Captain America. And if you can make that wildly popular, like you can easily make a futuristic science fiction family with like children, super mega popular with kids. So they could be the center. But I just think from a business perspective, it probably would never have timed out that well. And it's unfortunate, but you know, that's, I don't know what else they could have done besides this.
Sure. That makes sense. And like, and it was like a slow, you know, broaden, right? Like in the Multiverse of Madness, we saw, you know, a version of Reed Richards. We saw Professor Xavier, you know? So like they are slowly trying to introduce it. I think they could have done a bigger part of, you know, with X-Men coming in, I was expecting the X-Men to be introduced during the Multiverse of Madness and stuff, but I guess they want to save that for part two of this phase or whatnot. So we'll see. But yeah, as for this trilogy here for Guardians of the Galaxy, I was just, yeah, this is probably my favorite my favorite Marvel trilogy of, in general, of the, you know, that's come out. So Yeah, I don't know if you noticed. I don't think you did, but hopefully you didn't see the many times I cried during this film when I watched it. So, but yeah, it made me tear up, made me laugh, it gave me everything I wanted and more. So, good job to the team and freaking James Gunn and everything. So, but yeah, that's all right. So,
speaking of emotional roller coasters, you want to talk about Across the Spider-Verse?
Dude, so when this year they're like saying, hey, do you think we can give people two amazing sequels in the same year? And I'm like, that's not possible. And then all of a sudden we get two of my favorite fucking movies of this year have been sequels. And Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was, like I said, was like Guardians of the Galaxy, was everything I wanted and more from it. That was just an experience that, like, I need to go back to see it again. But yeah, what were your thoughts on it?
On Across the Spider-Verse?
Yes.
I think I wish I'd watched the first one before I watched this one, because I watched it, actually ended up watching it afterwards. It's everything that you could ever conceivably imagine the ideal sequel being and more. Like I said, it's like the Tears of the Kingdom of movies.
Yep.
It's probably the best Spider-Man movie ever made. It's probably the best animated movie ever made. And it's probably just one of the best movies ever made, to be perfectly honest. And I don't think that's hyperbole. Like, I think I will still think that in a year.
Same. And it's so funny because two of the best superhero movies that I've seen has been both of these Spider-Man movies, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, because they have just nailed it. And again, we're just going to go into it because, like, I just want to talk about it, and we're going to do spoilers and everything. So no warnings. But man, just the whole, I don't know how they fit everything they wanted to fit in this freaking film. Right, and we're able.
And
to
it's long it for an animated movie. This is a two plus hour animated movie. This is long. There was a guy in front of me with kids, and like I think the kids got fussy. He had to get up and like leave, and like leave his wife in there with the older ones. But like the younger ones, like not happy. It's like nope, too long. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes though. That's a long movie for an animated.
And you know what, man? You know what? It was 2 hours and a half, but the way that they left it, I was like, yeah, give me 2.5 hours more. Like, I'm ready for it. Like, I'm just gonna sit here.
Before we get too deep into it, I just want to say it's literally criminal the amount of money the first one made. I went back and looked at that. Like, it's freaking insane. That movie didn't even crack like $400 million. That's fucked up. That movie's incredible. I don't know how that happened. No, it's ridiculous. I mean, like, that movie's, like, the animation style in this is so amazing. Like, it's incredible. And, like, in the first one, it's really good. And I went back and watched the first one, but it's so much better in this one.
Dude, they upped
like,
it,
they
man.
Topped they, themselves. They... It's so crazy. Like, the art style of all the different Spider-Men. Like, the first 15 minutes of, like, Gwen's world, how it's, like, watercolor painted. It's, like, her hair color changes with her emotion. And, like, it looks like the comic book from like Robbie Rodriguez was the guy who originally kind of drew a lot of her initial comic books, and like the art style is very much adapted to it. Like, it's like these big brush strokes, you know, it's beautiful looking. And it's, and then she moves into another world and she kind of holds some of that artistic style in the other worlds. It's just like, it's incredible the artistic vision these guys have.
See, I want to read some of her comics now too, because of this freaking thing. Like, and it's so funny because we were given like, you know, her like small, like, you know, oh, here's my backstory. But like, we get a way more fulfilled, like, emotional backstory from her, and we're like, oh shit, and like we kind of get her even more. And like you said, like the watercolor animation, like her world is just straight up beautiful. Like, I just, it was, yeah. It was mind-blowing, and again, I want to see this movie over and over. What I think was also just, I mean, I thought was criminal, even though I totally forgot that they announced it was a part one, was that it just ended as a cliffhanger. I thought that was criminal, you know? So I'm like, you're gonna leave me at one of the most epic moments that are about to happen, and I have to wait
months? It's Empire Strikes Back, right? It's their Empire Strikes Back moment.
I mean, Empire Strikes Back kind of had a semi-ending, right?
No, I don't think it does. I mean, I think, you know, I think people would argue that maybe, like, Infinity War doesn't have an ending. I think Infinity War very clearly has an ending.
Yeah.
And the fact that just they lost, right? There's this battle that happens, and they totally lost. But I think Empire, I think this was very similar to Empire, in my book, at least.
Fair enough. I can see the comparison. I feel like this one just ended way more abruptly, you know, than like Empire.
I was actually expecting it, though, because someone that was the one thing that was spoiled for me, as I heard, because I saw it a week late, and I had heard in a like kind of like a non-spoilerish review of the movie, they said, oh, this is very clearly part one.
This is how long it's been since it was supposed to come out, I think, like last year. But they postponed it for a year, and so I know, and I was like devastated because I'm like, dude, like the last one that we got was in 2018, nearly 5 years ago, that like we got the first one. So yeah, and like, you know, after they announced it's gonna be the part one, you forget that little, you know, you forget that part, and you're like, oh wait, it's over. Like I was ready to like just freaking sit through here, but yeah, let's start with like who our villain is, who I am a huge fan of, this actor, Spot, who
did the voice actor. I forgot. I looked at the, you know what? I will congratulate a lot of the people who did the voice acting here, because usually when it's a famous person, you can tell it's that person.
Yeah.
If they're not like a kind of like a real Inuit voice actor. I didn't realize most of these people were those people, which is great. I think that's what you want from a voice actor.
Yeah. I mean, Jake Johnson for Peter B. Parker, I feel like he has a very recognizable voice. And the Spot, who's played by Jason Schwartzman, who was in, you know, his own show called Boredom.
He was one of the Nazis, too, in Inglourious Basterds, right? Or the movie theater guy?
Was he the movie theater guy?
I thought it was the movie theater guy. Maybe he's not.
I don't remember him being in that. Maybe he was. I don't remember. Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong about that. But anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was him either.
Yeah. He was in one of his main roles was in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He was the villain in that. And I appreciate this actor. I think he's really good. And I think he did like you said, everyone in this freaking film did an incredible job. And then I love Oscar Isaac as
Spider-Man. I didn't realize that was Oscar Isaac until the end either. I had no idea.
Yeah. Everything was just, man, I don't know. I'm speechless because I just want to I want to reiterate the whole movie. So I don't like this. I'm like, this podcast can't be 3 hours long, like, or 4 hours long, because we can't just, you know. But no, like, again, I feel like, dude, is it me or is Miles Morales becoming like the best Spider-Man that we have now? Like, it's just, you know, like, and it's just growing and showing more and more as I see his character grow.
I mean, the character work here is really good. I mean, like, especially like the relationships with his parents, I think is just like, it's really well written. I mean, actually you have a thing here throughout it. There's it's a relationship of like father child. I mean, the mom, she's a critical role of Miles's world and there's complication there and stuff, but they really do highlight specifically for almost all the characters, like the father child. So like Gwen has like a story arc with her father. Peter Parker has a story arc with his kid, and he's like kind of inspired by the events of the first one, and he ends up having a kid, and you see Mayday Parker in this now. And then Miles and his dad have like, you know, issues. Like Miles's dad is, and he's like a good dude too, which is nice. Like the parents are really trying. They're trying to pull out of him like a better willingness to communicate to the parents, and like they're trying to give him space. But they're also trying to support him, and they're nervous and they're scared, and they just kind of like they don't know what to do, but you can tell that they're trying hard. So there's a lot of nuance to, I think, Miles' relationship with his parents. It's not just like this very stereotypical, like Miles is always lying to them, and then like it's not like a CW show, and you could write it that way. Like Miles is constantly lying, and in return, it's causing drama. like, right. There's moments where, like, Miles is about to open up and then he doesn't. And then the mom is just like, you could tell she was on the, she knew she was on the cusp of getting it and she didn't quite get it. And she, you know, she pulls back a little bit. So it's like, I just think there's a lot of nuance there. And there's probably really relatable for a lot of people, especially, like, I would imagine it's relatable for, like, people of, like lower economic incomes and stuff like this, where, like, the family unit is, like, a lot more protective of one another because, like, they have to be in order to survive. And I think that's what you're seeing here, especially because they're, like, I don't know if the first – did they ever explicitly say if Miles's mom at least moved here from Puerto Rico? I don't know if that's explicit or not, if she's, like, first-generation American.
I think she was born in Puerto Rico or something, but I kind of feel like it's not just a social economical part, but like it's a cultural thing, right? Growing up as in a Mexican family, like that's one of the things I do appreciate about being Latino is that like it is a community that like is our parents, you know, that are overprotective. That like, you know, overprotective and want to make sure that like, you know, you're doing right and whatnot. And so it can be overbearing and overwhelming to where like the suffocation of like, you got to just let me grow. You got to just trust my decision making. And like that to me is 100% relatable because that's kind of what I've been through is that like there's like you got to just trust that I can figure this out. You got to let me fail. You got to let me grow. And that's what this whole film was about. It was just like, again, self-discovery and being able to grow and like knowing who you are and owning it. And I feel like what this movie did best, which I'm so, you know, amazed about, is challenging the idea that just because one thing was written one way does not mean it has to be that way for you to be, you know, for you to understand, how that is or what it means to be like a hero, right? Because my favorite thing about this thing is that this challenged the notion that like, oh, to be Spider-Man or to be something like a hero or something great, you had to have a great loss, you know? Like you had to lose an uncle, you had to lose a father figure, you had to lose someone important in your life, you had to, you know, like Batman losing his parents and stuff like that. And like, again, Peter Parker having to have his uncle, you know, die every single time in order for them to grow into owning, you know, owning themselves to be Spider-Man. Like, it challenges that notion. Just because it is like that for them does not mean it has to be for someone else in order to be the greatest Spider-Man that they can be. Or to, you know, for growth and stuff.
It's, you know, it's interesting because at the beginning he has, at the end of, during the story arc of the first movie was him gaining confidence to become Spider-Man. And then at the beginning of this one, he has a lot of confidence as Spider-Man at the very beginning, right? He's fighting Spot. He doesn't really care. He's like, whatever, you're a villain of the week. And then the entire premise of the movie, the second half, is that, like, he's not supposed to be Spider-Man, is what Miguel pretty much says. It's like, you were never supposed to be Spider-Man. That spider was not supposed to attack you or bite you. And, like, this is a screw-up. This is, like, you screwed up the continuity of this story. So they kind of turn that on, they pull it all away from him.
Sure.
Which is kind of an interesting, it's kind of your classic, like, let's pull away the superpowers from the hero and see how they react. And in this one, they're just like, let's pull away all of his self-confidence and see how he reacts. And it's that's kind of probably going to be the premise of the next one. It's like they pulled all that away and he's going to redefine whatever his story is. And it also parallels, you know, his problems or his relationships with his parents.
But that's kind of like what I love about it, is that they pull away like, oh, you know, this isn't supposed to be in your character, you know, for you to be Spider-Man. So like, you're not supposed to be Spider-Man because you're not, you know, and because like, of whatever reason, right? Like, we never saw any other Miles Morales Spider-Man, right?
No, he's the only one.
And because he wasn't that particular Peter Parker or whatever reason, like, they're like, oh, you cannot be Spider-Man. Well, like, who says you can't be? That was the main thing of the first one, is that anyone under the mask can be Spider-Man because of what the values are of being Spider-Man, not because of you have to fall in a certain line. And I love the fact that it kind of gave a fuck you to, like, all the gatekeeping Conquer people were like, oh no, Spider-Man's supposed to be this person, or like, oh no, the comic's supposed to go this way, so we can't have, like, you know, this different person kind of deal. So
or the Little Mermaid's supposed to be white.
And I was kind of fucking say that, you know, which I love, right? Because that was the whole thing that started Miles Morales, right? Like, when everyone, like...
Yeah, it's funny. Like, he was not... I don't think he was a liked character at the beginning. And this is common. And it's... People love to say that it's not because of their race, ethnicity, or gender, but it fucking is. Like...
Yeah, 100%.
It totally is. Ahsoka was the same exact way. I remember that. When Ahsoka was announced and, like, she was being depicted in those early movies, no, the fan base itself... From what you could tell, and to some extent, I also hate this because social media is not reflective of the real world, and I truly believe that. But she was, let's say, not a popular character. And I think had that been programmed and written as like a you know, I don't know, some kind of like normal, typical white Jedi, it would have had a higher probability of success. And now Ahsoka is wildly popular because they've given her time to develop the character and everything. And she's amazing. She's probably one of the best things to come out of the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. And now she has a live action TV show coming out soon with like an amazing actress who's wildly popular. And I think for people to look back and say, oh, it's not because she was a female and that's not why she was popular. It's just like, I don't know. I think it's naive. It's totally that. And I think Miles probably experienced that as well. When they first created the character, everyone's like, don't kill Peter. Why are you creating this character who we don't like? And it probably took years for him to gain popularity.
But even then, like you mentioned, like one of the biggest things that we just talked about in the Guardians review is that like, you can kill off a character, but you could always bring him back, right? Like in the first Into the Spider-Verse, they kill off the Peter Parker from that universe, right? Who was a blonde and blue-eyed, right? Who we know that like isn't like that in the, you know, who I think our Spider-Man was the Spider-Man B. Parker was like our quote unquote like Tobey Maguire one that we kind of
well now we know that Tobey Maguire is Tobey Maguire from this movie, which we should talk about that in a couple minutes. But I think at the first, when they wrote that first one, I agree with you. That was kind of the intention, I think.
Sure. Yeah. Because they had no intention how successful this movie was going to be. And it just turned out to be, again, one of the best freaking superhero movies / Spider-Man movies that we have been given. But again, I love the challenge to, like, those freaking gatekeepers. Because, like, who says, you know, you have to follow in these orders or these, like, continuity stuff in order to be this? You know, whatever that means. Because again, there's an idea for Spider-Man of what he values and how what it is to be a hero. It doesn't mean you have to have A, B, C to meet those requirements, like, you know, or whatever. And that was like the idea of the first one. Like, again, anyone under the mask who has these values can be Spider-Man or whatever. So the second one is just it's owning it, you know. It's like, don't tell me I can't when I'm doing everything that Spider-Man can do and even better, you know, like it's about saving everyone, no matter how you get there, who you are or whatever it is. Right. So I just was thoroughly enjoying that because it's, you know, even with like Gwen's story, like, you know, her dad gets killed. Right. As Captain in the 2018 Spider-Man game, Captain Captain Stacy is Gwen Stacy's dad, but in the 2018 Spider-Man video game, you have Miles Morales, right? But his dad, in that, I don't think his last name is Johnson, because I think in the actual comic books or whatever, his dad is his actual stepdad, but he calls him dad.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is also very common in a cultural sense. But in the game, the cat, when he becomes Captain, he dies that same day. So in this movie, they were pointing up to that point, which we got that, like, in order for you to become fully realized Spider-Man, you need to lose your dad kind of deal and deal with that. But it's like, well, no, like, imagine having to deal with that freaking anxiety and that weight of like dealing with the anticipation of dealing with loss. Like, you don't need to have those requirements met to be Spider-Man is what, you know, from what I'm getting from what this movie, you know, taught us.
Yeah. Okay, Andy, let's veer down into the cameo corner for a moment and talk about the larger connections to the MCU and all the juicy Spider-Man cameos.
How much time? Because there is like over 100 Easter eggs and stuff, man, because it's
we're just... not going through all of them. We'll go through the key ones. Let's start with the fact that this has formalized that the Spider-Verse exists within the MCU, right?
Oh yeah. And we get that because of Prowler.
That was a great cameo too, and I think it's funny. I heard one of the writers say they wanted one that no one would expect, but also made sense. And I was like, "That's perfect."
Yeah, that was amazing seeing Donald Glover freaking be Prowler, because he played that character.
You never knew if it was him or not. Like, you didn't know that was the Prowler, but it was kind of insinuated because in Homecoming, he said, "Hey, I got a nephew running around here. I don't want those weapons in this neighborhood."
Yep. And so his name is Aaron. So like, yeah. And so like, he finally, you know, they got Donald Glover to be in the freaking Prowler suit and be like, "Well, yeah." And so I loved seeing that, and I'm like, awesome. They have a connection to Tom Holland, Spider-Man. We physically see, or actually see clips of like Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire there during the explanation of the loss of the uncles, or Captain Stacy for the Andrew Garfield one too. So I thought, yeah, like I'm just excited for. I was just blown away.
So question, Andy.
Yeah.
How far do you think this goes? And by how far do you think this goes? What do you think the probability is that Spider-Man 2099? Miguel O'Hara is working with Kang. Do you think it, like, they'll actually do that? Or you think it's just like, hey, we just wanted to connect it. We had the opportunity to connect it, so we did. Or do you think it will actually prove to be something else eventually?
Yep, I think it's going to be something else. And this is me because of the Sony and Marvel side. You know? So we have our MCU Spider-Man, but we have our Sony Spider-Man, right? Which but like, they combine them both, right? So I have no idea, but I don't think if they pull that, then my mind's gonna be blown and it'll be like the greatest thing ever and whatnot. So I just don't trust what's her name, Amy Pascal or whatever, who's the CEO of, like, who like runs the Spider-Man part for Sony. So, because the best thing that they've pulled off besides recently has been the animated Spider-Man movies, because we got Morbius and that was a whole different thing, you know. So we don't need it. We already talked about that, and they're already getting a sequel. So with the live action stuff that Sony's doing, I have no fucking clue what their goal is.
We did see actually more live action, and we saw Spot jump into the Venomverse with Tom Hardy's
Venom.
He like jumped into that that corner store.
I totally forgot about it.
She's like, not surprised. She's like, whatever. This is not that weird, because that weird monster is always in here too.
Yeah, I was so unfazed. I forgot that she was so unfazed. She's great. But yeah, she totally. I forgot that moment. That was great.
Okay, then. So let's do in terms of cameos. Let's just do the top three Spider-Man cameos that aren't like kind of the main Spider-Man. You have a top three?
Obviously, Prowler is my favorite. Or are you talking about the Spider-Man in general?
No, just the Spider-Man. Like, I got a top three. Like, I watched Spectacular Spider-Man, so they had that one. They had a Spectacular Spider-Man in it. I thought that was awesome because I really loved that show. And it had unfortunately gotten canceled, and then they replaced it with Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, this is like 10 years ago, and I didn't like Ultimate nearly as much as Spectacular. So I appreciated the fact that they dropped in Spectacular Spider-Man from that old cartoon show. And then I also like Ben Reilly, voiced by Andy Samberg. That was incredible, and how 90s he was, talking about his biceps and stuff. And like, I even liked that he had like an even slightly larger role where they took him along into the other universe too, as like the muscle.
Yeah.
And then for my third Spider-Man cameo, I would probably go with the very original one, the one that had like, he had the slow frame rate that like stopped. So that was a pretty funny joke.
Yeah. Oh my God. I like that I saw the 2018 Spider-Man in it. I love that one. I have to go with the same one that you mentioned. Ben. What's his name?
Ben Reilly.
Ben Reilly. But what's the Spider-Man for that one? What's the Spider-Man name for him?
The Scarlet Spider. He was a Scarlet Spider for a little while.
Yeah,
too,
Scarlet. Yeah, yeah, Scarlet Spider. And then, dude,
they had Bagman too, Andy.
Oh yeah, they did. Bagman. Yeah, they did. They did. My favorite, though, to be honest, who got the best compliment, right, was and I want a movie just based off of this, is Lego Spider-Man.
That's like a good choice too. The Lego Spider-Man's fine.
I want a Lego Spider-Man movie, and I like how freaking the 2099 Spider-Man's like, you're one of our best.
It's the only one too. Is the Lego Spider-Man is the only Spider-Man that he compliments, apparently.
Yeah.
And get this, this is nuts. I didn't realize this. I heard one of the writers give an interview. So apparently, some kid made the entire trailer with Legos.
They got him to animate that part.
And they found that kid, and he was the one who did it for him. And they didn't know that it was like a 16-year-old kid until they found him, and then they had him do that scene.
I heard it was 14, dude.
14? That's 14. So cool.
Yeah. That kid has some shit coming up for him. Like he is. But he did an incredible, and he got to freaking do that scene. He got to animate that freaking whole scene, which was like one of the best scenes. Like I mean, the whole thing was just amazing. But I thoroughly enjoyed that scene, and I liked the voiceover of like the original, J. Jameson.
There's only one J. Jonah Jameson apparently too, which is kind of funny.
You know what? As long as they keep him as the... What's his face? What's his name? God.
Something Simmons.
Yeah. When they keep him as... I forgot his name. I need to look him up because I'm blanking out. But as long as they keep him as Joe Jameson, like, I'm content. He has the best voice for him. And it's just the same that's captured, like, in all around.
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons. There we go. Like J.K. Simmons, if as long as they keep J.K. Simmons as him, I'm gonna be content, because they use that similar. It's not J.K. Simmons in the Spider-Man in the video games, but like, it's so similar to like the animated movies, to the, you know, and close to like even better than like the Tobey Maguire version one. Or like it's just continuing on from the Tobey Maguire one. He's just so iconic in that role. So I just keep J.K. Simmons as. That's him. So, but yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. I mean, like, I thought that was awesome that they took the time to do that, and they could do it in a way that made sense. I think another really impressive thing about the movie is that, like, the first movie really actually, like, they pull a lot from that first movie, and it all makes sense. And that, you know, one of the things that's always really frustrating is, like, when you don't know you're going to do a sequel, it's tough to sometimes do that sequel and make it connect well to the first one. But this one really does. Like, I went back and I didn't even realize that other spider was from a different dimension. But in the first one, they show it. But they don't really talk about it. They show it bugs out, kind of, right? Like, it before it bites him. So you know it's from another dimension. But it's not a focus point of that first movie about where that spider came from. But it's there. Yeah. And now it's a focus point of the sequel. And that's great that they were able to, like, set up a couple of those things and really make this one... You know, it's bigger and better and everything, but it's still, from a story perspective, well connected to that other one. And then Spot was, you know, he has a connection to Spider-Man from that original one as well. So he's brought back in. So I kudos to them for kind of figuring out how to do that, even though they didn't know they'd probably get a trilogy when they made that first one.
Yeah. Dude, Lord and Miller, to say I wish I had their freaking ability to, like, just the opportunity, which I wish I had the time to dive in deep into the encyclopedia of Spider-Man, all the Spider-Man, and just deep dive and then create something like this. Because, man, did they do their fucking homework to get this going, you know? And so it's just, yeah, like, when I... Like, you're talking to my brother over FaceTime, and then my niece hijacked the conversation, and she's six. And so she, you know, they watched the first one because he was going to take him out that he was going to take her out that weekend to go see the next, see the sequel. And so she was there asking me, like, hey, so can you tell me about all the Spider-Man? Like, I want to know everything about Spider-Man. I'm like, oh boy, like, how much time do we have on this call? And I just gave her the basics, but I told my brother, I'm like, okay, well, look, she just opened a can of worms, because, like, Spider-Man's one of my favorite things, and now I get to freaking spoil her with, like, random trinkets and stuff like that, so he's gonna have to deal with me giving her a bunch of random crap.
And we didn't even mention it, but, like, Spider-Punk and Spider-Man India are also great. Like, the art style for both, I mean, I really like the Spider-Punk art style. I think the character was cool. And then the way that they animate and created the world for Spider-Man India was also just, like, very unique and interesting.
Yeah. No, I was a fan of that whole... That was such a great whole, you know, section and everything. And then Daniel Kaluuya as Spider-Punk was just so awesome. Like, now I even want to, like, read his comics. But he was such a great character.
I don't think there's very many of them, too. So that should probably actually be easy. This was all created by Dan Slott. Like, the concept of the Spider-Verse was created by Dan Slott, like, probably, like, I don't know, 7 years ago? Because he did a Spider-Verse. And that's where the one-shots came from. That's where the Spider-Gwen... I mean, because they call Spider-Gwen Spider-Gwen, right? But they call her Spider-Woman in the comics. But the comics called Spider-Gwen. So I think her one-shot came from there. And, like, it was just, like, artistically really popular because the great costume design, that always helps. You have a really good costume design like Spider-Gwen. That helps a lot. Just, her one-shot was super popular, and then they brought her into the fold as another major character. I think Spider-Punk, he's probably had way less appearances, but I'm sure there's been a couple of one-shots, maybe a miniseries.
Dang. So, yeah, now I'm like, again, I want to collect some of these, or, like, collect and read some of these comics. Like, I need, like, I haven't had anything on Spider-Gwen. I have, like, 2 Miles Morales trades, and I need to get a couple more of his. So, I have a $20.99, so, like, I just need to, like, spend time actually reading through all this stuff. So, yeah. So, oh, man. But, no, dude, But let's get into the, Miles Morales is probably the most powerful one out of all of them, because he, like, outruns and, like, beats all of them. But... we kind of, at the very end, we kind of see that he gets sent to the true universe where
the Spider came from.
Where the Spider came from.
Also great, too, because it makes sense, but it was surprising because, like, the Spider bit his DNA, and you're thinking the whole time, oh, wow, he's smart. He figured out a way to get back because they set up this thing where it's like, oh, they'll send you back based on your DNA. And then you realize, oh, his DNA is altered from a spider that bit him from another dimension. So again, I think great, smart storytelling that kind of flips the audience expectation really well.
Yep. So it was just great to see, you know, that we got introduced to a world without Spider-Man, and that, like, because of the whole doing again, and this is the Spider-Man, you know, the continuity story kind of, like, fulfilled what would happen if this doesn't happen or whatever. Like, we went to the world where Miles loses his dad, you know, and he becomes Prowler, which was a big twist at the very end, where we see that, like, because we see that Uncle Aaron comes back, and we're like, oh, which I was super happy to see Mahershala Ali come back because he's an incredible actor. So, yeah, at the very end, we see that because of the spider not going, you know, going to different dimension and everything, biting at different miles, that the Spider-Man in that world was not there ever. And we see that there was actually a villain involved, and that the whole freaking New York was pretty much, like, in flames. So
pretty much just like the Sinister Six looks like they're running around running things. I think it's great setup, to be honest. I know it's, like, it's really abrupt, but I'm sure now I'm sure they'll be part of the next movie where they'll be like, hey, like, maybe he feels obligated to stay there and try to fix something before going back, because he'll feel like the guilt of like, oh, this is like, even though it's not his fault, to be like, this is my fault. He'll feel guilty, like the way, like what Spider-Man 2099 told him. He's like, hey, now some universe doesn't have a Spider-Man because of you. So maybe he'll stay there long enough to fix it and then jump back, and hopefully he'll be able to save his dad. But I think it's great setup for the next movie. I can't wait. I'm glad that there's only a year in between this one and the next one.
What's it called? So my prediction is that I'm really excited for the next one, because if we got all the Spider-Men right in this one, I'm excited for Spot to like bring like all the Sinister, all the villains into this one world and get like an epic battle going.
I mean, you could get even more superheroes. The next one's technically called Beyond the Spider-Verse. Like, you could get the Avengers. You could get anything. I mean, technically, it's called Beyond the Spider-Verse, so who knows?
Yeah. So I wonder if we're going to see... One of the biggest things that they got announced is that... One of the biggest things that they were announcing is that they were going to maybe... At one point, Miles Morales was going to break out into, like, the live-action world. So the one mind-blowing thing that I can see them doing is that if we actually get, like, we get to meet our live-action Miles Morales.
That would be cool. I mean, this movie firmly establishes that there is a live-action Miles Morales in the MCU somewhere. Like, he's got to be somewhere. And there's a lot they could do with that. You know, they could do more Spider-Man movies with Tom Holland, which supposedly may be delayed. Who knows? Because it seems like he's taking a break from acting for a little while. But I'm sure, I mean, I would hope that if there's ever a moment to introduce a live action Miles Morales, like now is the time, right? You have a mobilized fan base that would love to see him. So,
and that's the thing, like, again, I think we talked about like the future of like, or it's not, I think somehow I wish I can, how I would want Miles Morales to be introduced in like the MCU or saying like it'd be, or like even the Sony one. If we have one of the Spider-Man, like let's say for, you know, Andrew Garfield in the Sony universe, like if we could have him mentor a Miles Morales, that'd be great. And if we could have a Tom Holland's mentor one, that'd be even better too. Like, again, I feel like you can't have one without the other. Like, I want both in the same world, you know? So, yeah. So we'll see, but I'm just, there's so many, what's the Spider-Man movie, like, Spider-Man movie, like, it's pretty much anything can be possible, you know, which is what makes me excited.
So, I mean, anything's on the table for the next one. So, if they maintain the quality of this one, it's just like, man, it'll be just like an incredible trilogy of movies that they've made.
So, but, yeah, anything we forgot to mention, or any last final thoughts?
No, incredible movie. Super happy I saw it. The only thing I would say is, like, it's nice to go watch that first one again. I wish I had. I thought about it, and I just didn't do it, and I kind of wish I did, because the difference is staggering, just in terms of the scope, the animation. Like, it's the best you could imagine from a sequel in every conceivable way, and when you have that reference point kind of fresh, it's really nice. Yeah.
No, it helped. I watched it the night before I went the next day, and so it super helped. I was really excited, and like, dude, again, the whole art, even the music, everything was just
incredible. The music, we didn't talk about it. The music's really, really good. They really upped their game in terms of like the timing of the music, the work they did with it. It's good.
And I'm definitely was in, like, before it gets out of theaters, I'm probably gonna watch it like a couple more times. So I hopefully, right now I've watched Guardians of the Galaxy 3 times, so I'm gonna maybe match that with this one. Great movie. If you have not seen it, then you are missing out in life, and it's one of the best. It's just one of the best Spider-Man things to exist, so check it out. Any last things before we finish this up?
Nope. That's it. We'll wrap this up. We may come back and listen to me bitch and moan somehow, maybe about that upcoming Flash movie.
You mean
I think that movie's probably not bad. I think the movie's not gonna be bad, but I'm gonna predict this. Michael Keaton is doing all the heavy lifting in this movie.
I thought we were gonna talk about the new Batman movie with Michael Keaton, not the Flash movie.
Yeah, based on the commercials, that's what it looks like, right? You watch those commercials, you're like, oh cool, there's a new Batman movie. For some reason they're calling it The Flash.
Yeah, no, totally, like, and 100%. Like, Michael Keaton, amazing actor. That dude is just freaking charming and everything. And, like, he's one of our, you know, one of the original Batmans besides, like, Adam West for live action. So, yeah, he's going to do the heavy lifting. Like, he's, yeah. So, yeah. So, hopefully, it was in time. I know it's been, we took quite a bit of a break, but, you know, every now and then we might be able to pop in an episode or so. So, yeah, I'm excited to maybe talk about The Flash in the near future. Besides that, yeah, this has been I Want to Talk Movies. My name is Andy.
And I'm Andrew. We'll see you guys next time.